नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो श्रीमद्भागवतम फिफ्थ कैंटो चैप्टर 24th टेक्स्ट 27th थ्रू 28th। द वर्सेस आर इन प्रोज सो वी विल जस्ट रीड द ट्रांसलेशन। Shukdev Goswami continued, My dear King, how shall I glorify the character of Bali Maharaj, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of the Three Worlds, who is most compassionate to his own devotee, stands with club in hand at Bali Maharaj's door. When Ravan, the powerful demon, came to gain victory over Bali Maharaj, Vamandev kicked him a distance of 80,000 miles with his big toe. I shall explain the character and activities of Bali Maharaj later. That is in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Text 28, translation. Beneath the planet known as Sutala is another planet called Talatal, which is ruled by the Danav demon named Maya. Maya is known as the Acharya, master of all the Mayavis, who can invoke the powers of sorcery. For the benefit of the three worlds, Lord Shiva, who is known as Tripurari, once set fire to the three kingdoms of Maya. But later, being pleased with him, he returned his kingdom. And since that time, Maya Danav has been protected by Lord Shiva. And therefore, he falsely thinks that he need not fear the Sudarshan Chakra of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, can you please repeat after me? Tato, the planet Talatal, Adhashtat, beneath. So, translation. The planetary system below Talatal is known as Mahatal. It is the abode of many hooded snakes, descendants of Kadru, who are always very angry. The great snakes who are prominent are Kuhak, Takshak, Kalia, and Sushena. The snakes in Mahatal are always disturbed by fear of Garuda. The carrier of Lord Vishnu, who is the carrier of Lord Vishnu, but although they are full of anxieties, some of them nevertheless sport with their wives, children, friends, and relatives. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. It is stated here that the snakes who live in the planetary system, known as Mahatal, are very powerful and have many hoods. They live with their wives and children and consider themselves very happy. Although they are always full of anxiety because of Garuda, who comes there to destroy them, this is the way of material life. Even if one lives in the most abominable condition, he still thinks himself happy with his wife, children, friends, and relatives. Om Hare Krishna. So at the outset, I would like to seek the blessings of all the devotees. I frankly do not consider myself very qualified, not at all qualified, to speak in front of devotees who have been hearing from such exalted personalities and such pure personalities. I frankly consider myself highly unqualified, spiritually and materially both, to give you the necessary inspiration in spiritual life. However, but since it is the instruction and for my own purification and for the purification of myself and for the glorification of Krishna, I would like to speak something, what I have heard from devotees. So I seek the blessings of all devotees. So reading the purport again, it is stated here that the snakes who live in the planetary system known as Mahatal are very powerful and have many hoods. They live with their wives and children and consider themselves very happy, although they are always full of anxiety because of Garuda, who comes there to enjoy them, to destroy them by eating them up. This is the way of material life. Even if one lives in the most abominable condition, he still thinks himself happy with his wife, children, friends and relatives. Hare Krishna. So we see here Srila Prabhupada is writing here that even if one lives in the most abominable condition, he still thinks himself very happy. So this is we see the situation every day. You know, from my own experience I can tell you. Recently I was having a discussion with my mother, and she's been working since around 30 years, 35 years nearly. And because we live in Santa Cruz, I used to live there. Mother also used to travel from Santa Cruz to Churchgate and spend about 2.5 hours traveling. So I used to always ask her, how is it that you can spend 2.5 hours traveling every day? Don't you get fried, frustrated? I mean, there's no need to work. You're a lady. Why don't you just, you know? No problem. I don't have any problem. So then I was thinking, wow, amazing. So in due course of time, in her tenure and her service, she got posted out of Bombay. Somewhere outside Bombay, somewhere at Bareilly or someplace in Punjab. So when she got her posting there, her office was adjacent to her house. It's just a wall which divided the office with the house. So when she had to go to the office, all she had to do is just cross one compound and go to another compound. So effectively she would be traveling and spending about 5 minutes for her, you know, commuting. So she had so much of free time and, you know, so much of luxury there. So when she was there for 2 years and subsequently posted in other places outside Bombay, she was thinking, when she got posted back to Bombay, she was thinking, my God, back to Bombay, so much of austerities and so much of difficulty traveling by train and all this. So recently when I met her, I asked her, how are things going on in your office? Saying, you know, what to do? I'm become like a small child. I just wait for a Saturday and a Sunday. It becomes so difficult, you know, just by the thought that traveling by train is so difficult. So you see that when a person spends some time in a particular hellish environment, then he gets used to it. And he thinks it's all right. Nothing, no problem with it. So what? So this is the situation. We see that so many people in Bombay, they're living here. If you just see the statistics, in many of the important places in Bombay, the pollution levels are beyond danger limits. It's hellish. You see, the pollution levels are so high, it's so difficult to just walk on the footpath. Your face will be covered with soot. If you're riding a two-wheeler without a helmet, you can see how much dust comes on your face. It's so miserable. There's no clean air to breathe. It's a hellish place in one sense. But still, you see, so many people are living here in Bombay and they're so comfortable. In fact, more and more people are coming towards Bombay. Why? Because they don't see the danger. They don't see the inconveniences. Many times people come from Delhi, they come to Bombay and they say, how can people live in such, you know, small pigeonholes-like buildings, you know, in small flats? Somehow because people of Delhi, they somehow have a little more luxurious apartments and things like that. They have. So somehow when they come here, they see that it's so miserable. How can Bombayers live here? It's so bad. But people who are here in Bombay, they just cannot leave this place. They feel so wonderful place. Bombay is like heaven. So this is the situation. Many times people who are from very luxurious and wealthy families, you know, they look at these beggars on the street and they think, oh, these beggars are so unhappy. But that day when I was coming from Kanjurmarg, I was coming onto the station, I saw some of these children, the beggars' children, they're so happily playing, they're making fun. And, you know, the laughing, smiling. And I saw that they were not having any problems as such. They were pretty happy. Even though they were living on the street, they were not having many inconveniences, but they were happy. They were not feeling that, oh, they're so unhappy. So this is the nature of life, of the human beings, that in whatever situation they are, they consider themselves very happy. They're very optimistic about their situation. Like, you know, there was one devotee was telling me one story. There was a boy He was a very optimistic boy. He considered himself a very good batsman. So he was very, very optimistic. So he was throwing the ball up in the air, and when the ball was coming down, he was practicing hitting it. So he threw it up, came down, he hit it, he missed. Second time he threw it up, he missed. So he started feeling, what is this? Then he changed his philosophy. He said, I didn't know that I was such a great bowler also. I'm a very good bowler because I'm bowling and I cannot bat. That means I'm a very good bowler. So it's the nature of the living entity to somehow just become very optimistic in that situation and become very satisfied in whatever situation he is. Classic example of Indra. King of heaven got cursed to become a hog in the gutter, in the sewage. And long time passed and Brahma was thinking the seat of heaven is vacant. Let us go to Indra and request him to come back to his position. And Indra as a hog is saying, what? How can I leave my wonderful family? I have my hog wife, I've got my hog children, and I have wonderful locality where I'm living, where I'm getting fresh stool and wonderful sewage water to drink. How can I leave this situation? And Brahma is bewildered. He's thinking, what is this? I have to take some drastic step. So he immediately goes and he kills the body of the hog, and Indra regains his consciousness and he regains his position as Indra in the heavens. So the story indicates that a living being in whatever situation he is always completely satisfied. No problem. We hear this story, very famous story, which Srila Prabhupada also says, of Kailash. Narad Muni goes to Kailash. He was a businessman. He was having his wife and family and his business. And he was telling, Kailash, please take the spiritual life now. He said, no, I cannot take now because I've got this business to do and my relatives are there and their children are there. They're too young to take care of my business. Not now. Later on. Narad Muni says, okay, I'll come back later. He comes back later and still, old man, on the bed, still he says, no, not now. I'm giving advice, consultation to my children. They're inexperienced. I'm required to guide them. Later. And eventually he dies, he becomes a dog. Narad Muni comes and says, look at your abominable situation. You become a dog. Take up the spiritual life. He says, no, I'm guiding my house. Can't you see? The house is unguarded. I am giving security. Narad Muni thought is abominable. Come after some time, he comes back and he sees that he has become a snake. The most abominable species. And still Kailash has not given up his hope. He's saying, no, I'm guarding the fields. The family members have hidden the treasure in this garden and I'm guarding it. Narad Muni thought this is too much. He goes and tells his relatives, please go, there is a snake there. Go kill him. And the relatives come with sticks and beats him up and kills him. And then Narad Muni, by his mercy, delivers him and he goes back to the spiritual world. So we see that how this story has been spoken to show that how every individual is actually very comfortable in a situation. He thinks he's very happy. One devotee was telling that when he was in college in IIT, Indian Institute of Technology, one of the students, he was addicted to drinking. So when they came out, they were trying to take a bus from there. That student, he was terribly drunk and he was lying on the footpath and it was heavily raining and the gutter water was overflowing. And in the gutter water, this student was lying with his nose inside the sewage water. And all the friends, they were saying, our acquaintance, our college mate is suffering, let us go and help him. So he was trying to shake him and, take him out of the water. And he said, don't touch me. Don't you know I don't know what I'm doing? I'm pretty happy here. Don't touch me. So he was saying that he's very happy. But the other persons who are not in illusion, they can actually see his situation. One Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture. That he was speaking on how one should behave properly, follow the shastras, otherwise you'll become a dog. So one of the people who are in the pravachan, they raised his hand and he said, Srila Prabhupada, I don't think there is anything wrong in becoming a dog. So this was the situation. So Srila Prabhupada said, okay, you have my blessings. What can he say? So there are people who think like this. One Srila Prabhupada is giving a lecture, we are not gods, we are servants of God. So one of the people who came to listen to the lectures, he stood up and he said, Srila Prabhupada, I am God. Srila Prabhupada said, okay, accept my respectful obeisances. What can you say when someone thinks he's God? At another time, another person stood up and he said, I am God. Srila Prabhupada said, so what's so great? Everyone thinks they're all gods. Please sit down. So situation is, even if they are miserable, they somehow have a philosophy to think that they're happy, satisfied, and there's something that they're not. So this is the situation. Now why is this so? Krishna explains the principle very vividly, very elaborately. Dhyayate vishyam pumsa sangasteshu bhajayate, sangha sanjayate kama, kama krodha bhajayate. That when we contemplate on sense objects, then attachment develops, we lose our memory, intelligence is subsequently lost, and we fall down from a standard. To see the reality, we become illusioned. Why? Because of absorption in matter, as Srila Prabhupada says. Because we are so much absorbed in matter that we cannot see what is reality. So the Srimad Bhagavatam tells the analogy or the example of the arrow maker. The Avadhut Brahmana, he learns from this example of the arrow maker. This arrow maker, he was so engrossed in making his arrow, a straight arrow, that he was filing, and the king and his parade came on that street where he was making the arrow, along with his troops and his huge armies, and they were marching across in that lane with his kettle drums and trumpets and bugles, and it was a big sound. But this arrow maker was just so engrossed in making his arrow that he did not even realize that this king and his parade came and they went. He was so engrossed in his work. So similarly, when the living entity is so engrossed, so obsessed with enjoyment that is available, as Srila Prabhupada says here, in materialistic family life, then they lose the focus of reality. We see that there are so many devotees. Just 2 days back, I was discussing with one of my friends in the base, and they were saying, you know, these company people have squeezed me out. They give me so much of work, and you know, we have to work so hard. Somehow it's really too taxing. Cannot. And I don't know how these materialistic people, they work so hard. They many times skip lunch, and they skip dinners, and they even skip their nights sleep. And they're working so hard, day and night. I wonder how they do it. But we see that many times devotees also find problems in coping up with the competitiveness of these materialists. So why is this so? It is because of the absorption in matter. Because they're so absorbed in getting their materialistic goals that they cannot see what is reality. And as a result, they do not see the passage of time. So as Srila Prabhupada says here, that Garuda comes to these planets, Mahatal, where there are many hooded snakes who live here. And Garuda comes there to eat them up. So Prabhupada is writing here that even though they have a fear, always they are frightful. Just like you see these birds and these animals, they are always frightful. They are always looking here, there. Is there any risk to my life? They are always looking here and there. But still they think themselves very happy. And quite surprising if you see, if you read these previous verses, there are descriptions of the subterranean hellish planets. And all these hellish planets, we see that there are descriptions of the people living there, and there are descriptions of the facilities available there. And we will be shocked to see that all these facilities are far more greater. There's far more pleasure than the facilities available in the heavenly planets. Far more opulent. And it is said in the purports that it is because the asuras, the demons who are living in the hellish planetary, subterranean hellish planetary systems, they have a higher standard of enjoyment as compared to the demigods also. But the Shastras say that this is hell. It's ultimately hell. Why? Because they forget their connection with Krishna. They cannot see the result of impending time. The living entity comes here to become the Lord. But ultimately no one is the Lord. Everyone is a servant of eternal time. Krishna says, Kalosmi lokakshaya krit pravriddho. He is the ultimate destroyer of everything. So he does not see the passage of time. So therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam does not give much importance to material comforts and all these things. Why? Because it is ultimately just temporary. So anything that is temporary, however enjoyable it may be, however fascinating it may be, but ultimately the Shastras just condemn it as rubbish. Why? Because it will be taken away in due course of time. So the Shastras give an example. There is a wonderful verse. Kapila Dev is instructing his mother, he's telling this verse. Tasse tasya jano nunam nayam vedura vikramam kalya manopi balino vayor eva ghanavalihi. He says that just as a mass of clouds cannot perceive the powerful influence of the wind by which it is blown away, similarly the living entity, due to absorption in materialistic activity, cannot see that time is passing. He cannot see that death is approaching. Therefore, in the verse it is said, Ayur Harati Vaipumsam Udyan Astanchayan Asau Tasyarti Tachano Nito Uttama Shloka Varte. That with every setting and rising of the sun, people are approaching towards death, one day closer to death. You know, the brahmacharis, all brahmacharis from various places, Belgaon and Bomb Chopati and Kolhapur and other places, Pune, we all had gone to Kanyakumari. And so we had a wonderful experience there, around 150, 200 brahmacharis all had gone to Kanyakumari, and we had gone to take darshan of those places where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had visited. So I still remember very vividly that how we had made big circles and, holding hands, all in saffron robes. Everyone were completely engrossed. Who are these people? Renunciates, and come to this place. And chanting the holy names of the Lord. And His Grace Radha Gopinath Prabhu was there, took the mic and he spoke this verse. Ayur Hariti Vaipumsam, with every setting of the sun, because we had gone there to see the sunset. Gone to see the setting of the sun. So he said, everyone who is materialistic engrossed, with every setting and rising of the sun, the day is gone. So he spoke that verse, and we all then went, because there was a wonderful tower with a spiral and a lot of space by which people could go there, sit there and watch the sunset. A beautiful sight. Many people come there to see the sunset. So all the brahmacharis, ultimately they did kirtan and all, and they took tickets and they went to that spiral waiting for seeing the sunset. And ultimately somewhere around scheduled time was 6 o'clock for the sunset, and all were anticipating, oh, the sun will set. And in the anticipation, sun was coming to the horizon. And just about when the sun was about to set, lo and behold, sun disappeared behind the clouds. No one could see the sunset. So everyone was disappointed, but I was just contemplating and I was thinking, yes, makes sense. The verse says that the sun never sets for those who are engrossed in chanting the holy names of the Lord. So symbolically, the Lord actually indicated that those who are chanting, all of you people who are chanting the holy names of the Lord, need not see the sunset. But for those who are not engrossed in chanting of the holy names, the sunset. So it's not a matter of disappointment. Actually, it is a point of celebration. Celebration that those who are engrossed in hearing this holy names, this message of the Srimad Bhagavatam, they need not fear. They can be carefree. So this is the principle of absorption. That when we absorb in a particular materialistic activity, that thing becomes very prominent in our minds. Like Yudhishthira Maharaj was told, go find someone who is inferior to you. Yudhishthira Maharaj went around the kingdom and came back saying that I couldn't find anyone. No one was more inferior to me. I am the most fallen. And Duryodhana was told, go find someone who is superior to you. He came back also disappointed, saying that, no one superior to me. I am the best. What was the difference? Both of them went, they saw the same people. But one could find everyone inferior to him and another could find everyone superior to him. Why? Because of the absorption. Because of the absorption in seeing the wonderful qualities. Yudhishthira always focused on the qualities of people. So when he saw the good qualities, he took up a very important position in his consciousness by which all the inferior qualities became insignificant. But Duryodhana, because he was focusing only on the negative qualities, that took up a very prominent position. So he was always in that consciousness of a superiority. So the conception of considering others as inferior to us, generally there's a tendency of the conditioned soul, as soon as we meet someone, we begin to analyze in how many ways is this person inferior to me. And we check out, tick, 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 okay. In so many ways he's inferior, so many ways he's junior. And we start feeling very good about, you know, being superior to this person in so many ways. But actually, great saints, they say that the conception of thinking ourselves superior to someone is very hellish mentality. So this is because of the absorption in the negative qualities in others and the positive qualities in ourselves, when actually it should be just the opposite. So therefore it is said that one must focus on people's aspirations and not on what they are at the present. That's what sets us apart from the jnanis. Because the jnanis are actually in one sense far more austere, far more tolerant, far more disciplined in everything that they do. And devotees may not be so, you know, just like Prabhupada in the initial days when they were deputing these devotees to do book distribution, he would get many complaints saying that your devotees, your disciples are not, they are not cultured, you know, they are misbehaving and they are very aggressive. But Srila Prabhupada said, but they have taken up to Krishna consciousness. They are aspiring to become pure and that's what is their qualification. You must focus on that. But the jnanis, what is their goal? Their goal is merging into the impersonal. The aspiration is to merge into the impersonal. Absolute. And even though they are well disciplined, but their aspiration is very low, to become gods. So the Lord does not appreciate jnanis so much. But he appreciates the devotees because they have the aspiration to become pure, to become the servant of Krishna. And that is what should be appreciated even by the so-called transcendentalists who are actually aspiring on the path of devotional service, to focus on what are people's aspirations than what a person actually is at the moment. Like example is given of a soldier. Soldier goes to the battlefield and he's having a lot of comradeship with his companion soldiers, and they have a lot of brotherhood, a lot of comradeship. But many times when he comes back to the barracks and they are, you know, amongst themselves, they fight a lot. They fight a lot and they argue and over this and petty reasons. But when they're on the battlefield, then they just completely forget the differences. Why? Because of the focus on their goal, a higher goal, which makes all these small differences insignificant. It's not that it's not there, but it becomes insignificant and you tend to just look over these things. I mean, because when there is a higher goal, you see that how the comradeship is so essential for their own survival. With every death of a soldier, he becomes vulnerable. So therefore, he needs his fellow soldiers so much because he has a higher goal, he has a higher principle in mind. Like there was a man, he was going in an aircraft for the first time. So when he was going in the aircraft, he told his son was taking him abroad. So he told his son, just look, look, look. Look outside. The people are appearing so small, just like ants. So the son told him, actually they are ants only, we haven't taken off yet. So this is, you know, I heard this thing actually. Many people know that when we ascend to the sky, we find everything insignificant. The buildings become like matchboxes, people appear like ants, everyone knows this. But still somehow or another, due to conditioning, we cannot somehow transcend on the spiritual path and make that progress which will help us see the petty differences and other problems as insignificant. Like one Srila Prabhupada's disciple told Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, there are so many rats in the temple running around here and there. Srila Prabhupada told them, chant your rounds properly. All the disciples are wondering, chant your rounds properly. What connection has this got to do with the rats in the temple? And they were contemplating, and then it dawned on them. They understood that Prabhupada's statement had a very deep meaning. When Srila Prabhupada said, chant properly, what it meant was that when you absorb yourself in the holy names of the Lord and make spiritual advancement, all these problems will appear insignificant. You will not make such a big fuss about it. And secondly, when you chant attentively, you will make spiritual progress. You will advance in the aspect of cleanliness, in purity, and you will keep things clean so that the temple will not be infested with rats.
So this is what it takes,
an advancement, an elevation by which we see all these petty differences and problems as insignificant. And this is what sets the transcendentalists apart from the Karmis. Like Lomasha Rishi was there, would live millions and millions of years, and he was told, why don't you build a house for yourself? And he says, a house? Life is so temporary. Life is so short. How can I build a house? And we see that there are people who are living such short lives, they are making plans for the future, and when they are around, you know, just approaching death, they purchase new flats and they're making arrangements for so many other things for the future. Why? Because their focus is material enjoyment. They forget, they cannot just understand that time is passing and death is approaching. So therefore, it is important to advance, to see these problems as insignificant, the material problem as insignificant, and focus more on spiritual. Like Mother Teresa says, that if you judge people, then where is the chance to love them? Only when we stop judging, by making some spiritual advancement, can we do that actually. So there was one devotee, when he became a brahmachari, his parents became very upset. So this brahmachari's parents, they also came to know a little philosophy, so they were trying to preach to him to come back home and live with them, serve their parents instead of living in the temple and serving the other devotees. So his parents told the devotee, brahmachari, said that, look, according to your philosophy, life is eternal. So yes. If life is eternal, you have all time to serve God, serve devotees. So yes. So this life, you give it to us, you serve us. Next life, you become brahmachari. So the devotee said, that is what I told my parents in my last life. So you see, this is the focus of a materialist and you see the focus of a transcendentalist. Completely different. Situation is the same, but they see it differently. So this is what. So absorption in spiritual energy does many wonderful things. Does very wonderful things. It can enhance the services. Like Srila Prabhupada, he was so engrossed in services that his services were multiplying and multiplying. He was writing books, he was making disciples, he had written 70 volumes of books, 5,000 disciples, 108 temples around the world, 14 times, maintaining the lives of all his disciples, and single man doing everything. Why? Because of absorption. More absorption in Krishna consciousness. And that's what the materialists also demand. They know the power of absorption. Therefore, Devamrit Swami, when he was here, he was telling in one lecture given by the human resource development manager, he was saying to the employees, what we expect from you is that when you wake up early in the morning, you should be thinking about your job. That is, they want complete surrender, complete absorption in the work. Similarly, in Krishna consciousness, what I expect is complete absorption. So Srila Prabhupada, once he was told, Srila Prabhupada, you know, there was an Indian in Russia, and he translated the Ramayana into Russian, and all the copies that were printed were sold out in one day. Srila Prabhupada immediately retorted, that means there is scope in Russia to preach. We should go to Russia and preach. This happened before Russian preaching started. So this was immediate reflex action of Srila Prabhupada because of his complete absorption in his activities to preach. Srila Prabhupada often said, I am free from lust. And at other times he would say, I am free from lust because I am too busy that I don't have time to focus on lust. I am so busy in services. So he keeps himself completely occupied, absorbed in Krishna's service. Similarly, we find that there are so many instances in the Shastras we show that how absorption can even take a devotee who is already sufficiently pure to higher limits of devotional service. Like it is said, every grain in Vrindavan is more opulent than all the Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual world. Why? It is said, every grain in Gokul is far more opulent than all the Vaikuntha planets put together. Why? Because the Supreme Goddess of Fortune, Radharani, actually took birth there. She appeared there. We see that all the Lakshmis are actually her expansions. But still, because of the all-pervasive nature of the love, of conjugal love and parental love, that all the other things just get covered up. Krishna covers them up by his energies. Just like when a living entity absorbs the material energy, he is covered up by the Mahamaya Shakti. Similarly, Yogamaya covers the spiritual world by which the opulencer is also covered up. And it is not seen and perceived. And the Lord is seen just as a coward boy. Example is given just like in the night sky. Scientists say that there are around 7,000 stars which can be seen by the naked eye. And around 3,500 stars can be seen at any point of time. But in the day, not even one star can be seen. Why? Because of the brilliance of the sun. Similarly, by the brilliance of Madhurya Prem in Vrindavan and Gokul, the opulences of Vrindavan just gets covered up. It cannot be seen. Similarly, we see the opulence of knowledge and learning is so much there in Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came down, he told to the Goswamis to propagate, write literatures. Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami, they are all assistants to the gopis. They are not even gopis, they are assistants, they are manjaris, and still they were propagating the transcendental literatures, writing books, the great scholars. And they were just assistants to the gopis. Then what to speak of the gopis who are directly descended? It is said when Lord Ramchandra was moving around Dandakaranya forest, the rishis approached him for conjugal love and marriage. And he said, not in this avatar, in the next avatar as Krishna. So these great rishis were greatly learned scholars in the Vedic literatures. But it is they actually who appeared as the gopis in Vrindavan. So we see that the opulence is actually covered due to absorption in Krishna Prem, in Madhurya Prem, and it is not perceived. So this is the opulences of Vrindavan. That how absorption can even cover up and assist the devotees to go higher and higher realms of devotional service. There is a story in the Sri Ramanujacharya Sampradaya of a great devotee called as Antalvan. This great Acharya, he was once instructed by Ramanujacharya, who was a spiritual master, to go to Sri Shailapurna, Tirupati, to make a garden for Tirupati, Balaji. So he was making that garden and maintaining that garden very nicely. And every day when maintaining the garden, he would pluck a few flowers and go for the pujari service of the Lord. So one day while he was tending to the gardens, he was plucking flowers to go as to offer to the Lord. He was bitten by a poisonous snake called a cobra. And he went to the altar without getting himself treated. So when he went to the altar, some of the pujaris noticed that he was badly bitten. And they told that this looks like a poisonous snake bite. You should do something about it. So Antalvan did not listen. Anandacharya didn't pay attention. So nevertheless, went into the altar and started doing worship of the Lord. Because of his intense devotion to the Lord spoke to him. He said, Antalvan, what are you doing? Why don't you get yourself treated? Otherwise you will die. And Antalvan spoke to the Lord. He said, Lord, a snake has bitten me. Accept it. But is it more dangerous than the snake which is within my heart, which is constantly biting me with the poison of false ego, lust and envy? This snake bite has only caused me death of this material body. But this snake which is in my heart is biting me and causing me repeated deaths life after life. If I go to that physician, he'll cure me of this poison. But I will be avoiding a physician like you who will cure me of the poison of false ego. What do you think is better? Serving you is better. Therefore, I have come to serve you. And the Lord says, but Anantacharya, I need your association as a pujari in the temple. Please, do something. And Anantacharya replies, well, Lord, if I die, I will take bath in the Viraja river and I will serve you in Vaikuntha. And if I live, then I will take bath in this Pushkarini lake and I will come back for your services. In any case, I am going to serve you only. What is the problem? And Anantacharya continued with his service and nothing happened to him. Poison didn't take effect on his body. So this is the result of absorption. As Krishna says, Ananya Chintayanto Mam Ye Jana Paryupasate Tesham Nitya Bhyukta Nam Yogakshemam Vahamyam. Ananya Chintayanto Mam. When a devotee completely focuses on the devotional service of the Lord, then whatever needed for devotional service, for the maintenance, and whatever is lacking, the Lord provides. So, this is a very wonderful lesson which Anandacharya gives to the whole world, that how one should be carefree in terms of maintenance of our own body and other necessary material things when we actually serve the Lord. The Lord takes care of everything. There is no need for separate endeavors. So similarly, this absorption can give us purification. Also, when we absorb our consciousness at the lotus feet of the great acharyas and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like, there is a very wonderful pastime in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nityananda. It is about the glories of Lord Nityananda. There is a wonderful pastime of a dacoit who was previously a Brahmin, and he had somehow fallen down from his standards and he had become a dacoit. He was in bad association, he was looting people and he was stealing, and he had become a big rogue. So he saw Nityananda, who was like an avadhuta, dressed up in all the opulent ornaments and jewels and pearls and rubies. So he looked at Nityananda and thought, I should steal this person. I should kidnap him and I should steal all his jewels. So he pretended to become friends of Nityananda and he was hanging around with him. But Nityananda knew that this person is having ulterior motives. So this thief, he went to his companions and he said, look, our miserable days are come to an end. If only now we steal this person called as Nityananda Gosai, we will become very rich. Very soon you are going to become very rich. He said, very good. So they said, let us go and steal him. So they prepare all their weapons and they come. And this Nityananda was living at the house of Hiranya Pandit, a nice Brahmin in Navadvip. So these soldiers, they come there, not these bandits, they come there and they take position. And when they come there, they find Nityananda sitting in the house and he was honoring Prasadam, and all the devotees were chanting the names of Lord Hari. They were immersed in the chanting of the names of Lord Hari. They were chanting and they were crying and they were shouting on top of their voices, Hari, Hari! And the bandits are looking. They said, all right, Nityananda is having his dinner. Let him finish his dinner and then he will take rest and then we will loot him in the middle of the night. So then they just wait. And Nityananda's powers take control over these bandits. And Nidra Devi attacks all of them, captures all of them, and they all go to sleep. And they wake up early in the morning when the crows are cawing. And they become completely bewildered, shocked. They immediately go hide their weapons and go back. And they're thinking, what happened? And they start arguing among themselves. You are a fool. You slept first. And the other person, no, I didn't sleep first. You slept first. And the other person was saying, what? Were you awake to see that I slept first? And then they started catching each other's shirt or whatever, you know, their clothes. And they started hitting each other and they started arguing. And the leader of the gang said, please, do not fight. It is by the mercy of Lord Goddess Chandi that we have been saved from embarrassment. What if we would have been caught? Think positive. Tomorrow again we will try. We will go. This time we will worship Chandi so that she will be happy with us. We will worship her with meat and wine. Okay. So they go worship Chandi and again in the night they come. This time when they come, to their surprise, they find in front of Hiranya Pandit's house soldiers, gigantic soldiers. They didn't even look like human beings. And all the bandits are surprised. Where did they come from? And each one of them contemplated that each soldier can destroy 100 bandits just like us. They thought we should not attack. There's no scope that we can attack. Let us wait here. Let us wait. And they were contemplating. And these bandits, they were having garlands, maha garlands around their neck. They were having chandan on their foreheads and they were constantly chanting, Hari, 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 Hari. And they're moving around the house. And Nityananda was just sitting inside the house along with his devotees, thinking, who are these people? And they waited. They were thinking, some people said, this Nityananda is not an ordinary person.
Some people say that he's Mahashaya, he's Gosai, he's an empowered personality. It is because of that he's made these arrangements. The leader of the group said, no, this cannot be possible. Some very great man has come to meet him in the house, therefore he has come with his bodyguards, and therefore he's protected. Don't worry, we will try some other time. And they wait. After a few weeks, they again try, they come back. And somehow when they come out that particular night, by the power of Lord Nityananda, it was extremely dark. They couldn't see anything. So they were prepared to attack. In the middle of the night, they rise with their weapons and they run towards the house where Nityananda was sleeping. And immediately all of the bandits, they become blind. They become blind and they start falling over each other, and they fall into a ditch. Some people fall into a place where they wash hands. Some people fall over bushes of thorns, and they are badly bitten by leeches and worms and all those kind of insects, and they are badly injured. They become so frightened, they had lost their eyesight, that they nearly died. And Indra, seeing their position, that they had come to attack Nityananda, he started showering rain, heavy rain. And they were floating in the ocean of misery. In such a situation, the head of the bandits, he absorbed himself in thinking about the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. It dawned, that situation brought about a change in his consciousness. He took shelter of Lord Nityananda, absorbed in Lord Nityananda's lotus feet. And when that happened, immediately the illusion vanished. He got back his eyesight and he runs to the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda and confesses and begs apologies. And Nityananda gives him his mercy and tells him, I will give you forgiveness from all the sins provided you declare that you will not do this again. And he pleads, begs for forgiveness, and he gets Lord Nityananda's mercy. So if we all also falling in the footsteps of these bandits, also absorb our consciousness in the service of Lord Nityananda, certainly we will also achieve his mercy. So we'll end here, it's time up. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol.